Mr. Jack Gabbett, Real One. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Gabbett?
I was born on the 13th of August 1924 in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada.
And could you tell us a bit about your family's background and what it was like out there in Ontario?
Not a lot, because I don't remember very much, but my father was in the army in the Royal Engineers in World War One, and was quite badly wounded, went into hospital in Nottingham where he met my mother, and after the World War One they decided to immigrate to Canada. But Dad had had the back of his right heel shot off, and by the time they'd finished with him he had very bad circulation in his leg, so he just couldn't stand the cold winters in Canada. So by the time I was six we came back to this country, so I have very little recollection of Canada whatsoever. In fact, I'd virtually forgotten all about it.
Well, where did you move to in England when you came back?
First of all, down to Bournemouth, where my mother was a sister in a nursing home. Then we came up to Beaconsfield, where she was in a similar theatre sister in another nursing home. And then we finished up in Ealing, and most of my young life and school life was in Ealing.
And was your family reasonably well off? I mean,
My dad was a cabinet maker, a top class joiner. So, he was comfortable, but not well off by any manner of means. He worked for Joe Lyons in their joinery works at Fulham.
And what about your education? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, I went to an elementary school in Northfield, which is part of Ealing, got a scholarship and went to Ealing, well, in those days it was Ealing County School for Boys. And I was there, I was in the fourth form when war broke out and was evacuated to Aylesbury for a year, which was a complete and utter farce because we used to cycle home every weekend, much to the annoyance of the headmaster.
Now, what do you remember of your evacuation to Aylesbury? That would be 1939 through to 40, would it?
Yes. If you want my honest opinion, it was a dump. I didn't enjoy it at all. I had three billets, none of which were very happy, because quite a lot of people, the evacuees were imposed on them. They didn't have any choice. You know, you've got three bedrooms, there's two of you, you will have two evacuees. And that was it. Well, unfortunately, the ones I had, not very happy with. And after a year, they...
Did they mistreat you or just...
Oh, no, not physically, but... I mean, one couple that I was with, he was a road sweeper, and he didn't hold with homework. So he wouldn't let me do any, which, of course, I then got into trouble at the school, told him what had happened, and got moved, and it was that sort of thing.
But were you properly fed and...
Oh, worked? Yes. Yes.
What about, did it interrupt your education? You know, did the school move with you and then you shared?
The whole school moved. In fact, we shared Aylesbury Grammar School's school. So most of the time they used the classrooms in the morning and we used the gym as a classroom. And then in the afternoon we swapped round and we used the classrooms and they used the gym. Well, that caused some friction because the local people reckoned that their kids were getting a less good education because of it. But at the end of a year, they reopened the fifth form in Ealing, back in the old school. And I came back. And they also brought back Ealing County School for Girls. And it wasn't worth opening both schools for just the fifth form, so they came in with us. So that's the only year the schools were co-educational. I thoroughly enjoyed that year because I joined the ARP as a messenger.
Now, hang on a minute. What did you specialise in at school? What were you good at or bad at?
Well, academically. Well, the best subject, I suppose, was maths and physics. From a sports point of view, I was just run-of-the-mill. It was nothing very, very special.
Now, you came back in 1940.
Yeah.
About when in 1940 would it be?
Well, it must have been around about September time, when the school year started up.
So you came back, in a sense, just in time for the Blitz?
Yes.
Now, what about, before we go into your time as ARP messenger, what about sort of air raid precautions, shelters, blackout, things like that? Can you tell us a bit about that as you knew it in your house in Ealing?
Well, we lived, in fact, in a flat over a shop. in the high street, so we didn't have any shelter. I mean, if we wanted a shelter, we had to go out to a public one on the Ealing Green.
Did you ever do that?
No.
So you didn't have a Morrison shelter, one of those table ones?
No. We didn't have an Anderson. Well, we didn't have a garden.
No, Morrison.
No, you mean the inside one?
Yeah, the Morrison.
No.
You didn't have that?
No. So mainly because our ground floor was at first floor level. The shop was underneath it, so it wasn't on the bottom floor of the house.
And what about the blackout? Do you remember how your family arranged it?
Well, we had a set of blackout curtains, which my mother and father pulled over very quickly, because living in the high street, we soon got told off if we showed a light.
Did it make it difficult when the blackout was on, when you went outside?
Yeah, but you got used to it. I mean, when I was an ARP, I was a messenger because I was too young to be.
Well, let's talk about that. Who were you an ARP messenger for? Which group, ARP unit were you attached to?
Well, it was post C8 in Ealing. It was a little concrete warden's post put up on a bit of green halfway between Ealing Broadway and South Ealing.
And what were your duties?
I was a messenger.
What did that entail?
Well, I had my bicycle, and my job was taking messages around to the other posts in that particular group.
And what kind of messages would it be, or would you not know?
Didn't know sometimes, but if there was an incident, if they wanted help, if they wanted the fire brigade. They used the telephone if they could, but the telephones weren't always working. And so it was me on most of the posts had a messenger. Because we had, I think it was one full-time paid post warden, and the deputy and the other wardens were all non-paid volunteers, and the messenger was.
So, and what hours would you do on that? I mean, what sort of structure of your time?
I think from memory, I usually clocked on around about 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, and if nothing had happened by about 10 or 11, I went home and went to bed. But if there were air raids on, then I was there most of the night, in fact. I know there are occasions when I went to school the next morning straight from the post and still in my overalls, which, of course, I like because it gives you something to crow about when you go into school.
Now, what about your time at school? You must have been getting near school leaving age.
I was. Well, at the end of the fifth form year, I took what was called matric in those days, up in Ealing, in the school there. So, it was a bit more difficult, but, you just had to do it, so you did it.
And what happened next? What job did you, when you left?
Oh, when I left school, I went straight to the Regent Street Polytechnic into the School of Architecture, Surveying and Building to qualify as a quantity surveyor.
Now, what made you decide to do that?
That's good. I've often been asked that, and I honestly don't know. I mean, I must have talked to our form master, who was the sort of careers master as well, and there must have been a range of options. There was a certain amount of maths involved. I liked the idea and decided to give it a go.
And that would be 41 you started there, would it?
Or yeah.
After leaving school?
After leaving school, I went straight to the poly.
And how was the poly, the workings of the poly, affected by the war, would you say?
In that we lost, or they'd lost, a lot of the instructors, a lot of the tutors, because they'd been called up and got into the military, into the armed forces. So most of our tutors were fairly elderly. Other than that, and the fact that we had to keep going down the basement when there was an air raid, or which fortunately wasn't so much in the daytime, it went perfectly well. We did have problems on the practical side, because part of the course was doing surveying and levelling at Kenwood, which was out in the open, so that was a bit more iffy. And at the end of the year, the first year there, I was taking the RICS, the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors, their examinations. And I took the first one at the end of the year and got through it. But then I was told that I couldn't get deferred for another year, which I needed to take the intermediate, the next one. I could only have 6 months. Well, 6 months was no use at all. So a school chum of mine and I volunteered for air crew because I'd been in the ATC.
Now, when did you join the ATC? Let's talk about that before we go on to that.
First year I came back from Aylesbury.
So as well as being a volunteer for the ARP, you were...
In the ATC.
Now, what training did you get with the Air Training Corps?
Oh, General Morse, squad drill. I can't think of other things. We used to visit one or two RAF stations. We went to Kidlington in Oxford.
Where were you based at?
The school.
ATC?
Our school. There were two ATC squadrons in Ealing, and one was at our school.
Do you know the number?
1413.
1413 squadron.
Yeah. And our flight commander, in fact, was my school form master.
Did you think the training was worthwhile? I mean...
Oh, yes, you learnt a bit, and learning something is always useful.
So you do that sort of 1940 to 1942?
No, I dropped out of the ATC about halfway through the first year at the Poly, because it was getting a bit too much doing ARP, the Poly, because I had to go up to Regent Street every day. So, no, I took, I can't remember what it was now, but one of the ATC examinations, and then decided enough was enough.
So 40 to 41.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what about volunteering? How did what had interested you in the RAF, and how did you go about volunteering? Because it's not that easy to get into the RAF at that time.
Well, it was easier if you were in the ATC, because I'd joined the ATC with a PNB, Pilot Navigator Bomb Aimer, stream intention. So when I was told I couldn't get deferred anymore, I went back to the ATC, and my old flight commander, I don't know how he did it, but he put it through the rigmarole that I then went for selection.
Now, where did you go to selection?
Cardington. RAF Cardington.
And what do you remember of the selection process?
Well, I got through the selection board, and I got through the first medical. Then when I went for the second medical, I was chucked out as unfit for all grades of aircrew because of my eyesight. And I was then told I could either call it a day and go home and wait to be called up, or remain as a volunteer. And they gave us a list of RAF jobs that were needing people. And one of them was photographer. And a chum of mine from school already was a RAF photographer, so he said it was quite interesting work, so I said, right, well, I'll stop in and be a photographer. So I went home, and, well, about my 18th birthday, I went back to Cardington again, only this time as a recruit.
So you were volunteering as a photographer?
In effect, yes.
Now, when did you go to RAF Cardington? Do you remember?
What? When I went into the Air Force?
Yeah, actually in.
43.
Do you know which month or time?
April. Yes, it was. It was April, because I came out 4 years and 4 days later in April 47. So it must have been April.
Now, what was your reception when you got to RAF Cardington? You know what? You arrive as a civilian, and they've got to sort of make you into a service. So
the very first process.
You know?
Chaotic. Well, I was only there for 3 days when you get the paperwork done and you get kitted out. And then I was posted to...
What about the kitty now? What did you get out, George?
A vast pile of things.
Do you remember what they were?
Well, I know there was two uniforms and a greatcoat and two pairs of boots. I can't remember. Three shirts and six collars, two ties, and all the button stick and housewife and other bits and pieces. You want a kit bag, of course, and your webbing. So 3 days later, I think there were about 30 of us in the intake.
Anything else happened during the 3 days? Or
not really, no. Oh, yes, lots of injections and inoculations and that sort of thing.
Did the inoculations have any effect on you? I mean,
the vaccination did. I had an arm like a football. But being the Air Force, they gave it to us on a Friday, so that the 36 hours light duties we were given was a Saturday and Sunday when you were virtually off anyway.
So where to after RAF Carnage?
Skegness, for the recruits training, square bashing and that sort of thing.
And what was the establishment at Skegness? That was just a...
Well, RAF Skegness...
A training centre.
I don't know what the official... But it was a recruit training centre. What number it was, I don't remember. But it was carried out in buildings all over Skeggy. There's, you know, cinemas and sports halls. And we were billeted in commandeered houses on the... Well, what would have been boarding houses on the seafront. And we, you know, I think it was the Odeon Cinema. The car park was the parade ground. And we had 6 weeks of lectures and square bashing.
So that would be from April to back end of May?
Yeah, something like that.
Now, what were your billets like in, you know, the house? Were there people still living in them, or was it just that you'd taken them over?
In that case, the house was empty. It was purely RAF.
So how many would be in there? Was it overcrowded? Or?
I don't know. I should remember, but I think the room I was in, there were probably about four of us. I mean, the ordinary house bedroom, you can't get many more than four beds and four lockers. And
did you have proper beds or bunk beds? Or
no, iron beds, hard thing with biscuits. You know, the three-piece mattress.
And what would a typical day's training be like during that? You know, I know you're only on basic training, but what would a typical day be like?
Cool, I mean, I'm going back a long time now. Well, I know every day we had a session of square bashing, of drill.
Then how did you take to drill? What did you think?
All right, because I'd done it all in the ATC. So, in fact, I knew virtually all that they were going to teach me anyway on the square bashing side.
And then everybody is up to the markers?
No, the ones who hadn't been in the ATC were floundering a bit to start with. In fact, we were usually picked out to show them how to do it, which helped.
Did you find that drill became boring, or did you get interested in it? Because, you know, or did you understand why you had to do so much of it?
Yes, because I think part of the lecturing philosophy in the ATC was drumming into you the need for discipline and doing what you're told and that sort of thing. I mean, we were virtually schoolboys, so we tend to be a bit rebellious at times.
And what other training would you do, you know, your basic training?
Arms, you know, small arms, and we went on the ranges and fired rifles, Sten guns, chucked hand grenades. I had the... We were firing the Sten gun for the first time, and we went on the range, and the flight sergeant said, no, he wanted us to fire one round to familiarise ourselves with the weapon and then let loose a magazine. And the targets were tin cans on a stick, about 30 yards away. It wasn't very far. I mean, a Sten gun is like a hose pipe. You can't aim it. And I fired me one shot, and the tin fell over, and I shot straight through the stick. And of course, everybody looked at me as, whoa, he's good, isn't he? And I never hit the flipping tin after that. It's pure bit of luck. And then, as I say, we went on the range again, chucking hand grenades, which was a bit bit hairy, but...
Why?
Well, because you were told at the start that it may not go off, and if it did, you know, don't go after it. It'll get your head down, and the flight sergeant's job was to go and investigate it, and one or two didn't go off, and you're sort of right down the bottom of the pit trying to get even deeper.
Any other training you had? I mean, was there a lot of PT?
Yes, quite a lot of PT.
What type of stuff were you doing? Ooh. Was it route marches or boxing?
Oh, we did route marches as well, which gradually got longer and longer, and started off with just no kit, and then you gradually built up to full kit. And a fair amount of fatigues as well.
What kind of fatigues?
Well, cookhouse fatigues for one.
Was that a punishment or was that...
No. Well, it was used as a punishment sometimes, but they needed X number of bodies in the cookhouse cleaning pans and the like, and they just detailed off recruits. The coal yard was another one, going out with the coal wagon, delivering bags of coal to the various houses, and that was the one we always hated because you got so filthy. And when you got back to the billet, I mean, there wasn't any hot water, so you were trying to clean yourself up with cold water, and I didn't enjoy that at all.
How about preparing for things like kit inspections, getting your... can you tell us a bit about that? Because how much bull was there at the time?
Not a fantastic amount. I mean, yes, obviously polishing boots and cleaning buttons and laying your kit out in a prescribed order. I think we had a kit inspection about once a week, something like that. Usually on the Friday before we packed up for the weekend.
And but they weren't that strict. I mean, you know, you just had to have it well done, but it wasn't sort of...
It depended to a degree on who the sergeant was in charge of the billet. I mean, fortunately, we had one who was a bit more human than some. And, of course, you had to keep the billet clean as well. So most of it was lino on the floor, so you're polishing the lino and the bumper, which Friday was kit inspection day, and so that was the bull night as well.
Now, what about, how did you get on with your fellow recruits? Were they from the same sort of background yourself? How did you relate to them?
I honestly don't remember a lot, but no, I think they were people from all walks of life.
Did you get on well with them?
Yeah, as far as I remember, didn't have any major fallout, because they were all in the same boat. They were in a completely strange environment. I mean, I'd never been away from home apart from evacuation, and that hardly counted when you go home every weekend, so...
And what about the NCO instructors? How did you get on with them, and what were they like? How did they, were they good at their job?
Yes, the only ones that we didn't usually get on very much were the drill instructors, the DIs, because they were mostly blokes who were incapable of doing anything that needed two bits of brain, and so they did tend to be a bit bolshy, and they were the ones that we liked the least. The other PTIs and the like were fine, but we weren't meeting any technical instructors at that stage. It was too soon.
And any sign of any officers? Did you see much of the officers?
No.
Anything else about your time at Skegness?
Not really, no. It was 6 weeks and that was it.
So that would be, you know, roughly moving towards the start of June, I would imagine.
Mm.
Where did you go next?
Well, I was down for the photographer's course at the number one school of photography at Farnborough. But there wasn't a course date, or rather the next course date starting was about, a month off, I think. So I was posted to RAF Benson.
Now, what did you do there?
Well, I was a UT photographer, the lowest of the lot. So most
What's UTs?
Under training. It's either untrained or under training, one or the other.
And what were you actually doing as an untrained photographer?
Mainly cleaning out the dark rooms, making up solutions of developer and the like, and a general dog's body with any other bit of tatty job going that wanted doing.
And how long were you doing that for?
Oh, about a month. And then the course came through.
So roughly to something like late June or July. It doesn't matter too much for these dates, would you? Right. So then you were sent to number one school of photography at RAF Farnborough.
Yeah.
Now, what do you remember of your time there? First, what were the billets like, or the
barracks? The barrack blocks were pre-war permanent barrack blocks. Old ones, you know, stone floors, and we had, I think it was called a McDonald bed that had steel slats and not springs, and your biscuit went straight under those.
And could you take us through the course? What were they training you in? And in as much detail as you remember, because it's actually quite important to compare how things work in practice with how they work in training.
It was a general course, but a very condensed one, because pre-war, a photographer's course was 18 months. But they did an awful lot of things. I mean, they actually went up in aircraft and took films. Well, that was cut out because there wasn't the time for it. So it was the theory of photography, familiarisation with the various types of cameras.
Now, what types of cameras were you introduced to, you know, if you remember them?
Well, the F-24, the smaller one, and...
What was the F-24?
5-inch focal lens, the ones that we had.
Where was it carried? How was it used?
Handheld, the ones we had at the school.
And what would that be used for? Do you see what I mean?
Oh, general reconnaissance. often handheld out the side. And also the Cinegun cameras, I think it was called a G8. We were familiarising ourselves with that, the one that the fighters carry that's synchronised with the guns.
Would you be learned? What would you learn? What did you have to learn about a camera? To say you knew a camera, would it be things like how to load the film?
How to load the film, how to unload it, how to do simple repairs if there was a jam or that sort of thing. And we also did the other side of it, the processing, developing films, fixing them, printing from them. We had a week on the mobile darkroom.
What about darkroom? What was the methods employed at the time in the darkroom in the RAF?
Well, most of our work was time and temperature with a very, very dim green safe light. So dim, in fact, when you turned the lights out and turned that on, you couldn't see anything for a couple of minutes. But mostly the developing was done on time and temperature.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, with a thermometer, you got the developer to the right temperature. And if the film was correctly exposed, it took X minutes to develop, so you set the timer, and that was it. But usually you took the film out of the developer a bit beforehand to have a quick look at it. And that's where I learnt my first backdoor dodge, because I was told that if you light a cigarette underneath the bench so it doesn't show, take the film out, put the fag in your mouth and give it a puff to glow. If the negative is fully developed, you'll be able to see it through the back of the film. So you had a quick puff, and if you could see the neg, you knew it was pretty well cooked, so you could take it out of the developer, which was a much better idea than just using the time, because you knew you'd got something that was the right amount of developing done.